Tattva Darshan, Indira Ekadashi Mahatmyam. The glories of Indira Ekadashi, which falls in Krishna Paksha or Pitri Paksha of Ashwin Maina, October, November, every year. Bhagavan Sri Krishna described to King Yudhisthira the glories of Indira Ekadashi in the Brahma Vaivart Puran. Yudhisthira asked, "O Krishna, O Madhusudan, what is the name of this Ekadashi?" During Krishna Paksha Ashwin Maina, actually it's September, October. What are the Yama Niyama for observing this Ekadashi? And what is the Punya fall from observing it? Bhagavan Sri Krishna replied, "This is Indira Ekadashi. Observing it can deliver one's degraded forefathers and simultaneously eradicate all of one's sinful reactions. O King, now I'll tell you a history from Satyuga. In Satyuga, living in the kingdom of Mahishmati Puri, there was a famous devotee, pious devotee king named King Indra Sen. He is expert in defeating his enemies, and his kingdom was very prosperous. He lived happily with his family and was always attached to Vishnu Bhakti. Constantly absorbed in spiritual knowledge, King Indra Sen passed his time chanting the names of Sri Govinda, the Vishnu form who bestows liberation. One day, King Indra Sen was sitting happily on his throne, and he was suddenly visited by the great sage Narada Muni. The king received him with all respect and worshipped him with sodasha upachar, 16 auspicious ingredients. Narada inquired from Indra Sen, "O great king, is everyone happy and prosperous in your kingdom? Is your mind fixed in your religious principles? And are you engaged in Vishnu Bhakti?" It's a very nice line of inquiry. When a brahmachari, sannyasi, munificent preacher meet some grihastha, whether the grihastha is a king or a baniya, or a kayast, or a vaisha. Very nice questions. Narada Muni asked the king about the people that he interacts with. He asked about his kingdom and the people in it. Then he asked about him. First he asked about his area of control, his kingdom and his praja. That was his first question. His second question was, "Well, how is your mind?" And his third question is, "Are you doing your sadhana?" So these are three very good questions that can be asked to anyone when a preacher, even if the preacher is not a brahmachari or sannyasi, maybe grihastha, when he meets some bhaktas that he's preaching to, or he can also ask them questions in these three lines of direction. One is, how is the first area of interest or question that the rishi or sage or devotee inquires from congregational member or new bhakta, etc.? How is your area of concern? In other words, the area you're responsible for and controlling. So most people aren't really kings, although they may think they're the king of the house, or king of the apartment, or king of their wives, or whatever. They have that bhav or hankar mentality. But actually most people that we interact with or preach to are grihasthas. So then they're not in charge of thousands of people and praja and living entities within a vast, prosperous kingdom, but they're in charge of a very small nuclear family of one wife and two children, maybe mother and father at most, sharing one tiny apartment in one small area of one small city known as Delhi or Bombay. At any rate, this particular question, class one question is, oh, Krishnadas, how is your family? How is your family? Is everyone happy in your family? Everyone's healthy and happy? Your business is prosperous? Then the second question, which Narad asked, applied directly to the king, not to his expansions or to his area of control, but to him, how is your mind? Is your mind controlled? Are you peaceful? Are you disturbed? You're anxious? You're agitated by incessant material desires? This is also another good area of question when meeting a disciple or someone we're preaching to, a student, congregational member. How is your mind? Is your mind peaceful? Are you fixed in the four regulative principles? Are you following the four regulative principles? Your mind is peaceful? Your mind is fixed in your religious principles? Then the third area of your question concerns the king's sadhana. Narada Muni asked, how is your mind? And then he asked, how is the expression of your mind? The third category or area of questioning is the expression of one's mind, which means his activities. How is your sadhana? How is your bhakti sadhana doing? Are you engaged in Vishnu bhakti? So we would say, are you engaged in sadhana? You're reading Bhagavatam every day? You're worshipping Thakurji? You're chanting the holy name, Nam Sankirtan? You're performing your devotional service every day? So these three levels of questions are very relevant and appropriate in Satyuga, 3.5 million years ago, and also today in Kali Yuga, as Narada Muni is showing the etiquette. Narada Muni is the Bhakta avatar, the teacher of devotion, and the disseminator of bhakti throughout the universe. And he's showing us, as those that follow in his footsteps, as itinerant preachers or would-be welfare workers, that when we approach someone, we inquire from them, how is your family and business? How is your mind? How is your devotion? Generally, even now in contemporary times, if we meet an advanced devotee, sannyasi, guru, etc., as we often had the experience, they would generally ask only one question, because seeing that we were sannyasis or brahmacharis, they wouldn't ask us about us, our area of control, or our kingdom, our business, our family. They wouldn't ask us about us, our mind. They would ask only one question: how is your bhajan? How is your bhajan? And then in finding the answer to that question, then the preacher, guru, sannyasi, etc., he could understand the position of the person's mind, an overall state of spiritual health by that one inquiry of how is your bhajan? Replying to Narada Muni, the king answered, O best of sages, by your mercy everything is well and auspicious. In fact, my entire life has become successful by receiving your auspicious darshan of my kingdom on this wonderful day. And all the performance of my yajnas and pujas has borne fruit by your Mangala Darshan. O great sage among your demigods, please tell me the cause of your visit. After hearing these humble words of King Indrasen in Mahishmatipuri in Satyuga, Narada Muni said, O lion-like king, now hear about a wonderful incident that had happened to me. Once I went to the abode of Yamaraj. Yamaraj greeted me respectfully and worshipped me appropriately. After sitting comfortably, I offered prayers to the pious, truthful Yamaraj. Then I saw in the assembly of Yamaraj in Pitri Loka, I saw that your father had gone there because he had broken a vow. And this was a sinful reaction for breaking a vow. O King Indrasen, your father gave me a message and he asked me to convey the message to you. And this is his message. Indrasen, the king of Mahishmatipuri, is my son. O Bhagavan Narad, please tell him that due to some sinful activities committed in my previous life, I am now living in the abode of Yamaraj. Therefore, he should observe the vow of Indira Ekadashi and give away its piety to me. Then I will be released from my present condition of life. O King Indrasen, continued Narad, this was your father's request. In order to deliver your father to the spiritual world, you should observe the vow of Indira Ekadashi. In this narration, up to this point, we find two important points for consideration. One is that his father of King Indrasen was in hell, in Pitri Loka and Yamaloka. He had gone to hell for a sinful activity. And the specific sinful activity is breaking a vow. Sankalpa nasht. Sankalpa kanda. He broke his vow. When one takes a vow, a fixed determination or promise, affirmation, to observe a particular auspicious occasion like Ekadashi, Vrata, and he takes a vow, my dear Lord, for your pleasure and the pleasure of your divine consort, Srimati Radharani, we will try our best to observe this sacred Ekadashi Vrata for your pleasure and satisfaction. And upon concluding this vow, whatever piety or sukriti or punya you want to bestow upon me for my benefit, I will be most appreciative and grateful for that gift. And then the devotee commences his Vrat, Ekadashi Vrat, Chaturmasya Vrat, Kartik Vrat, the Sringa Chaturdasi Vrat, Janmastami Vrat, Radhastami Vrat, Gaur Purnim Vrat. But if he takes a vow and then he breaks it without completing it because of his lack of determination or his lack of enthusiasm or surrender, or some mental or physical weakness he has succumbed to, that's considered to be a great sin. Because when one makes a vow and fulfills it somehow by the grace of the Lord, he does get the result. He does get the punya phal and the Sukriti fall, the benefits as promised in the description of that Brata, they come to him. He's rewarded. He receives a great reward and boons and benedictions from diligently and properly observing any given vow. So because so much benefit and reward is gained by the proper execution of a vow, it means that it's not a joke. It's not some lackadaisical performance or some half-baked performance. Gurus and well-wishers, they advise their students, think 10 times before you take a vow and make a vow that you can keep. Don't take a vow that you can't keep. It's most reprehensible. In fact, it's so sinful you can even go to hell for it. It's obvious that the father of King Indrasen, although it's implicit although not stated, that the father was also a great Vishnu Bhakta, like father, like son. This is in Satyuga. Practically everybody in Satyuga was a devotee of the Lord. There weren't too many terrorists and demons around in Satyuga. Everyone was truthful and pious and religious and strictly following Varnashram Dharma, Dharmart Kama Moksha. So his father, the father of King Indrasen, must have been a great Vishnu Bhakta because he had left a very prosperous kingdom for his son Indrasen to rule over, and his son was also a great Vishnu Bhakta. So although this king, the father of Indrasen, was, we can assume, a very great, pious person and religious person, Vishnu Bhakta, and he was someone who was observing vows for the pleasure of Vishnu, like Ekadasi. But one of those vows that this religious and pious devotee king, the father of Indrasen, one of those vows that he observed, somehow he broke it. Sankalpa Kanda. He broke his sankalpa and he got such a severe reaction, he went to hell. So this is better we don't make a sankalpa, don't take any vows to do any particularly intense austerities unless we're sufficiently convinced and determined that we can execute them. This is the warning here in this story of Indira Ekadashi, which occurs in Krishna Paksha Ashwin Maina. One should think it over deeply before embarking on a particular brata or vow, Kartik Brat, 1 month Kartik Brat. Do what we can do. Don't, as they say in colloquial terms, don't bite off more than you can chew. Prabhupada was a very practical devotee, very common sense personality, and he gave us the yamas and niyamas which we could basically and almost barely tolerate and follow. So his prescription or requirement for chaturmasya was extremely lenient. In fact, it was lenient to the point of being the final word. There's no more, that's the most reduced form of brat that's recommended in the shastras. This is the simplest, easiest, the last straw vow to observe that Prabhupada gave us, that if you can't do this, then do that. If you can't do this, then do that. If you can't do nirjal fast all day and stay up all night, then do nirjal. If you can't do nirjal and stay up, if you can't stay up all night and do nirjal, then just do nirjal. If you can't do nirjal, then fast all day from water and food, and after sunset, take some water. And then if you can't fast from water till sunset, then you take some fruits 1 time a day after sunset. And it goes on like that, and finally it gets down to the point, well, if you can't do this, then in the first month, don't eat any spinach, leafy vegetables, mint leaves, spinach, in the first month of Chaturmasya. And if you can't do all these different rigid austerities and penances and vows and bratas in the second month, then you fast from yogurt. In the third month, you fast from milk. In the fourth month, you fast from urad dal, kachoris, urad dal, etc. Well, this is the minimum chaturmasya vrata, and this is what Prabhupada introduced in ISKCON. Even we find today there are devotees that can't uphold this most simple of vrats. This is the pathetic condition of Kali Yugites. The bottom line entrance fee or entrance passing grade to begin chaturmasya or observe any kind of chaturmasya is these four simple abstentions spread over 4 months, but some pathetic people can't even observe these. So this is, Prabhupada gave us a brat that we can follow and hopefully not break and end up in hell. And if we can do more for the cause of our self-purification and to increase our attachment to Krishna and increase Krishna's pleasure and favorability towards us, then we can try to cautiously and carefully increase the level of our bruts and fastings and penances, all the time remembering that the most important vrut and fast is to always remember Krishna, never forget him, and to always chant the holy name of the Lord, Kirtaniya Sadhari. So whatever brut or vow or austerity we do, it should end up during the course of the vow and throughout the entirety of the vow or vrata, we should be remembering Krishna and chanting the holy name of Krishna, Harinam Sankirtan. The second point that we've heard so far in the story of Indira Ekadashi is this principle which we hear repeatedly about doing something good for the benefit of someone else and transferring that benefit to that other person, whether they're living amongst you or with you, you can see, feel, and touch them, or whether they're already deceased or not even living. So apparently this principle of transferal of sukriti or piety, punya transferal, is very much extant in the shastras and very much a reality that we can do something for the benefit of another. It's the same in the material world in terms of charity or welfare. We can also do something for the benefit of someone else. Someone can be the beneficiary of our compassion. There may be hungry people somewhere, even on the other side of the globe, starving in some famine or some calamity, and we can give a donation to some group, and that we can give a big donation, and they will buy food and take that food to Africa or Malaysia or wherever that natural calamity is, typhoon, cyclone, and distribute food and give benefit to others. So even with our money, we can benefit others. So also by our vrattas and fastings, we can transfer not only our money or our help to help others, but we can transfer our punya, our sukriti or punya, to benefit another soul that's a living person or even a deceased person who's on some other planet or maybe even in a ghostly form. We may not know. So this is the compassionate thinking and feeling and actions of a Vaishnava Kripambudhi, thinking how to benefit others. And the Shastras are so much encouraging this principle of helping others and giving to others and thinking of others and trying to benefit others, that they even give inducements. The Shastras give inducements and encouragements to fast on behalf of others. In one place in Padma Purana it says if someone performs a vow or fasting or a vrata and they mentally decide, they take a sankalpa that the sukriti fall, punya fall, the boons and reactions and benefits and benedictions that I will accrue or that will be given to me as a result of successfully executing this brat, I mentally decide and think that these benefits should go to my father or my mother or husband or wife or friend or disciple or guru, whomever, or my deceased grandfather or father. The benefits should go to them, to another party, so that they will become more spiritually inclined or more attached to Krishna or more pure or more realized or attain more bhakti shakti or whatever. So the Shastra is describing this principle. They say if someone takes this sankalpa and decides, I will observe this Ekadasi Brat, but I want to give the shruti, the benefit should go to my guru or to my husband or wife, then that benefit will go there. That recipient, that beneficiary of your vow or your brat, your fasting, he will receive the full benefit of observing an Ekadasi Brat, for example, even if he's not observing Ekadasi. It may even be even grains on Ekadasi, or it may even be dead in Pitri Loka or anywhere where he can't observe Ekadasi. So he'll get the benefit in his account, his spiritual pious account. And then you, the performer, the Padma Prana is promising, you will get 100 times the benefit of merely observing one Ekadasi for your own benefit. So as I was saying in the onset, the scriptures are very much inducing by these promises, which are true, and encouraging pious people and religious, spiritually minded people, devotees, bhaktas, etc., to fast on behalf of others or to consciously decide to give the benefit of your vow or brata or chaturmasya or kartik to your guru, husband, wife, son, friend, deceased father, grandfather, etc. They will get the full benefit of observing that Chaturmasya Brata or Kartik or Ekadasi. And you, the observer, the follower of that Brat, who are so compassionately thinking, you will get 100 times the benefit. So this is a very powerful principle and action that one can do. That's backed by Shastra and so many examples. Then the story goes on. King Indrasen replied to Indra, "Oh, great sage among the demigods, please explain how to follow this Indira Ekadashi." Narada Muni replied, "On the day before Ekadashi," which means Dasami, "one should bathe early in the morning and faithfully offer oblations to the forefathers for their satisfaction. And on Dasami, one should only eat once a day and sleep on the floor at night. On the day of Indira Ekadashi, one should rise early in the morning, brush his teeth, wash his hands and mouth, and take a bath. Then he should make his sankalpa not to indulge in any kind of material enjoyment and thus observe a total fast. Then he should pray to the Lord, saying, O Pundrikaksha, Pundrikaksha, O lotus-eyed one, I take shelter of you. Oh, Pundrikaksha, Sharanagati Prabhu, Sharanagati. Then at noon, on the day of Indira Ekadashi, in the front of a Shalagram Shila, one should offer oblations to his forefather according to the proper rules and regulations. Then, after offering oblations, he should worship the brahmanas and feed them sumptuously and give them dakshin, donation. Then he should give the remnants of the oblations to the cows. During the day, one should worship Lord Rishikesh," which means your deity, or Griha Thakur. "Should worship Lord Rishikesh with sandalwood paste, flowers, incense, lamp, and foodstuffs, with devotion. One should do Hari Jagaran, stay up all night on Indira Ekadashi, while chanting, hearing, and remembering the names, forms, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The next morning, one should worship Lord Hari and feed the Brahmanas. That would be on Dwadasi. Thereafter, one should break his fast by eating along with his brothers, children, grandfather, and relatives while maintaining silence. O King, if you follow this Ekadashi, Brat, as I have just described to you, then your father will certainly attain the abode of Vishnu. As we're speaking like this, Narada Muni disappeared. King Indrasena strictly observed Ekadashi following Narada's instructions, along with his children, servants, and others. As a result of observing this Ekadashi fall, flowers showered from the sky. The father of King Indrasena immediately boarded Garuda, and he left Pitriloka, or left hell, to go to the abode of Lord Vishnu, Vishnu Loka Prapti. Then the saintly king Indrasena ruled his entire kingdom without any impediment. Until the end of life, he gave his kingdom to his son, and he personally went back to the spiritual world. Indira Ekadashi Vrata Ki.